Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November Examination Series 2015. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Where did Bishara first meet her friend? B. When is Bishara's exam?
Hi, Becky. It's Bishara here. I don't know if you remember me, but we spent 1 week's holiday together. We were so pleased to see each other at the hotel reception after meeting at the airport earlier that day. Anyway, I'll be visiting Australia for a few days and thought it'd be nice to get together and go for a coffee. I was supposed to be coming in April, but I'll be sitting my English exam then, so I'll be coming in May. Can you let me know if you're free? Just in case you've lost my email, it's bishara20@hotmail.com. Hopefully I'll see you soon. Hi, Becky. It's Bishara here. I don't know if you remember me, but we spent 1 week's holiday together. We were so pleased to see each other at the hotel reception after meeting at the airport earlier that day. Anyway, I'll be visiting Australia for a few days and thought it'd be nice to get together and go for a coffee. I was supposed to be coming in April, but I'll be sitting my English exam then, so I'll be coming in May. Can you let me know if you're free? Just in case you've lost my email, it's bishara20@hotmail.com. Hopefully I'll see you soon.
Question 2. A. What time did Mehdi see the doctor? B. What did the doctor advise Mehdi to do?
Hi, Mehdi. How are you? Last time we talked, you weren't very well.
Yeah, I went to the doctor's last week.
How did that go?
Well, I had to wait for nearly an hour. My appointment was at 3:30 in the afternoon, but I didn't go in until 4:20.
Oh, dear. But what did the doctor say?
Well, he took my blood pressure and asked me a lot of questions. He thinks it's nothing serious. He suggested that I should rest more. My mum also wants me to get more fresh air, so now I go for a walk in the park every day.
Hi, Mehdi. How are you? Last time we talked, you weren't very well.
Yeah, I went to the doctor's last week.
How did that go?
Well, I had to wait for nearly an hour. My appointment was at 3:30 in the afternoon, but I didn't go in until 4:20.
Oh, dear. But what did the doctor say?
Well, He took my blood pressure and asked me a lot of questions. He thinks it's nothing serious. He suggested that I should rest more. My mum also wants me to get more fresh air, so now I go for a walk in the park every day.
Question 3. A. What delayed planes flying from the west coast? B. Which gate will the plane to Istanbul leave from?
Because of today's heavy snowfall and poor visibility in the north of the country, all planes are expected to be delayed or cancelled. All incoming flights from the west coast are disrupted because of a storm. We would like to apologise for the inconvenience caused. Passengers waiting for the flight to Istanbul at gate 11A, your plane will now depart from 18B. Also, could all passengers for Paris please go to gate 12A, as your plane is ready for boarding now. Because of today's heavy snowfall and poor visibility in the north of the country, all planes are expected to be delayed or cancelled. All incoming flights from the west coast are disrupted because of a storm. We would like to apologise for the inconvenience caused. Passengers waiting for the flight to Istanbul at gate 11A, your plane will now depart from 18B. Also, could all passengers for Paris please go to gate 12A, as your plane is ready for boarding now.
Question 4. A. Where does the customer want to sit? B. How much are desserts after 5 p.m?
Welcome to the Olive Brunch. A table for one?
Yes, please.
OK. Where would you like to sit, sir?
Last time I had a table near the kitchen and it was really noisy, so I'd rather be by the window this time, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Here's the menu. Let me tell you about our special offers today. You can get a free soft drink with any pizza. Our desserts are only £2 each before 5 in the afternoon. After that, they are £3.50.
That sounds very good. But can I have a couple more minutes to look at the menu, please?
No problem. I'll come back later. Welcome to the Olive Brunch. A table for one?
Yes, please.
OK. Where would you like to sit, sir?
Last time I had a table near the kitchen and it was really noisy, so I'd rather be by the window this time, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Here's the menu. Let me tell you about our special offers today. You can get a free soft drink with any pizza. Our desserts are only £2 each before 5 in the afternoon. After that, they are £3.50.
That sounds very good. But can I have a couple more minutes to look at the menu, please?
No problem. I'll come back later.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by a journalist about an unusual race called the Sun Trip. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences below. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Today I'd like to tell you about a very new and exciting race, the Sun Trip.
I was delighted when I was asked to report on the event. It is called the Sun Trip because the contestants use various types of bikes powered by the sun. We are all very familiar with the use of solar energy for domestic use, for example, to heat the house. The main aim of this race, though, was how we can use energy from the sun in transportation. The race was organised by a Frenchman called Florian Bailly, who cycled a solar bike from Paris to Tokyo in 2011. His journey was 12,000 kilometres long, and it took him 4 months. Maybe it was then that he thought of this new race, which was over 7,000 kilometres long. 7,300 kilometres, to be precise. And it took the competitors from the French town of Chambéry to the Kazakh capital city, Astana. Normally, there are quite a few checkpoints to go through during a race. However, the Sun Trip only had two. Initially, the organisers were thinking of a small village in the Alps as the first checkpoint. Because of too many objections from the locals, they chose a mountain pass instead. It was quite a challenging place to reach on a solar bike, as it is 2,188 metres above sea level. The Russian Olympic city of Sochi was the second point the competitors had to pass on their way. It depends entirely on the competitors which route they choose between the start and finish, as long as they pass through the checkpoints. Even though the race was in its humble beginnings, quite a few teams showed their interest. Over 30 teams signed up, but only 28 took part, which was still a healthy number. The participants came from all over the world, but mainly from France, Belgium, and Canada. The teams could compete in two different categories. The first category was a real race. The teams had to try and reach Astana in the shortest time. The second category was a bit unusual, and it involved competing in reporting the news on the developments from the journey and also the best web page. The team I decided to follow was a pair from the Czech Republic, Peter and Tom. They chose two reclining tricycles equipped with so-called reptile panels made up from solar panel cut-offs. I was very impressed with the speed these bikes produced on sunny days. Thanks to this speed, they managed to do 300 kilometres a day. In comparison, during cloudy days, their average mileage dropped down to 100 kilometres a day. Getting ready for any race is very important. The Czech pair picked swimming as a way of strengthening their muscles for the race. Most of the other contestants told me that they spent a lot of time biking in hot weather and difficult terrain. The Czech team were on their way to winning the race, but several unexpected problems slowed them down. Whilst they had difficulty with extreme weather in general, there was one incident that lost them their first place. Their bikes got stuck in the mud after very heavy rain. As a result, they came fourth. Now they're already planning their next adventure, and I wish them all the best.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Today I'd like to tell you about a very new and exciting race, the Sun Trip. I was delighted when I was asked to report on the event. It is called the Sun Trip because the contestants use various types of bikes powered by the sun. We are all very familiar with the use of solar energy for domestic use, for example, to heat the house. The main aim of this race, though, was how we can use energy from the sun in transportation. The race was organised by a Frenchman called Florian Bailly, who cycled a solar bike from Paris to Tokyo in 2011. His journey was 12,000 kilometres long, and it took him 4 months. Maybe it was then that he thought of this new race, which was over 7,000 kilometres long. 7,300 kilometres, to be precise. And it took the competitors from the French town of Chambéry to the Kazakh capital city, Astana. Normally, there are quite a few checkpoints to go through during a race. However, the Sun Trip only had two. Initially, the organisers were thinking of a small village in the Alps as the first checkpoint. Because of too many objections from the locals, they chose a mountain pass instead. It was quite a challenging place to reach on a solar bike, as it is 2,188 metres above sea level. The Russian Olympic city of Sochi was the second point the competitors had to pass on their way. It depends entirely on the competitors which route they choose between the start and finish, as long as they pass through the checkpoints. Even though the race was in its humble beginnings, quite a few teams showed their interest. Over 30 teams signed up, but only 28 took part, which was still a healthy number. The participants came from all over the world, but mainly from France, Belgium, and Canada. The teams could compete in two different categories. The first category was a real race. The teams had to try and reach Astana in the shortest time. The second category was a bit unusual, and it involved competing in reporting the news on the developments from the journey and also the best web page. The team I decided to follow was a pair from the Czech Republic, Peter and Tom. They chose two reclining tricycles equipped with so-called reptile panels made up from solar panel cut-offs. I was very impressed with the speed these bikes produced on sunny days. Thanks to this speed, they managed to do 300 kilometres a day. In comparison, during cloudy days, their average mileage dropped down to 100 kilometres a day. Getting ready for any race is very important. The Czech pair picked swimming as a way of strengthening their muscles for the race. Most of the other contestants told me that they spent a lot of time biking in hot weather and difficult terrain. The Czech team were on their way to winning the race, but several unexpected problems slowed them down. Whilst they had difficulty with extreme weather in general, there was one incident that lost them their first place. Their bikes got stuck in the mud after very heavy rain. As a result, they came fourth. Now they're already planning their next adventure, and I wish them all the best.
That is the end of question 5. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about hobbies. For speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recording twice. Speaker 1.
When I was about 12 years old, I got injured during my skiing holiday, and it took me a long time to recover. First, I spent 1 month in hospital, and then I had to stay at home for a further 3. I certainly had a lot of time to relax. My friends often came to visit me to cheer me up because I was really bored. Then my cousin from Mexico came to visit and taught me how to paint. I've kept it up and it developed into my new passion.
Speaker 2.
When I was younger, I always wanted to have a special hobby, something that nobody else was doing. I felt that I always copied my friends, but it wasn't really what I wanted. However, in the end, I became interested in the same thing that my friends were into. I don't know what happened, but one day we were talking about climbing, and I became fascinated by it instantly. I was really keen to research it more. Now I'm even thinking of becoming a mountain guide.
Speaker 3.
When I was a teenager, my friends and I shared a lot of hobbies, but with time, I lost interest in all of them. I was simply searching for something unusual, not just going swimming or collecting something like everybody else. I spent ages thinking about what I really liked doing. I also talked to my friends to get some recommendations, but it didn't really help. The idea of kite surfing came to me totally unexpectedly, and it was the perfect hobby just for me. As my uncle always says, good things come to people who wait.
Speaker 4.
I live in a big city, but my family and I have always spent our summer holidays in the country. We tend to rent a cottage far away from cities and tourists. Normally, we ask our friends for recommendations where to go. However, we always make sure that the place is somewhere near a forest or in the mountains, as my father and I love observing the wildlife around us. I fell in love with this activity at an early age. It came as no surprise to anybody, as I've always had loads of pets at home.
Speaker 5.
My best friend has recommended a lot of hobbies to me over the years, but none of them were really for me. I tried almost all of them, but every time it ended up in disaster. I remember one time I was trying out martial arts and I broke my wrist. I needed a lot of physiotherapy, and my physiotherapist suggested some classes in yoga after my treatment finished. Whilst it helped me to get my flexibility back, above all, what it really taught me was how to release tension and take things more slowly. Signing up for those sessions is something I'll never regret.
Speaker 6.
At first, I started jogging just as a hobby, but then I began to notice that it had a positive effect on my stamina. I didn't get so breathless while running to catch the bus in the morning. I just loved the way I felt so fit. I recommended this to my best friend, and he enjoyed it too. In the past, I thought my hobby would be something to make me more relaxed, as I tend to get quite tense at times. But no, the active way is the way for me.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
When I was about 12 years old, I got injured during my skiing holiday, and it took me a long time to recover. First, I spent 1 month in hospital, and then I had to stay at home for a further 3. I certainly had a lot of time to relax. My friends often came to visit me to cheer me up because I was really bored. Then my cousin from Mexico came to visit and taught me how to paint. I've kept it up, and it developed into my new passion.
Speaker 2.
When I was younger, I always wanted to have a special hobby, something that nobody else was doing. I felt that I always copied my friends, but it wasn't really what I wanted. However, in the end, I became interested in the same thing that my friends were into. I don't know what happened, but one day we were talking about climbing, and I became fascinated by it instantly. I was really keen to research it more. Now I'm even thinking of becoming a mountain guide.
Speaker 3.
When I was a teenager, my friends and I shared a lot of hobbies, but with time, I lost interest in all of them. I was simply searching for something unusual, not just going swimming or collecting something like everybody else. I spent ages thinking about what I really liked doing. I also talked to my friends to get some recommendations, but it didn't really help. The idea of kite surfing came to me totally unexpectedly, and it was the perfect hobby just for me. As my uncle always says, good things come to people who wait.
Speaker 4.
I live in a big city, but my family and I have always spent our summer holidays in the country. We tend to rent a cottage far away from cities and tourists. Normally, we ask our friends for recommendations where to go. However, we always make sure that the place is somewhere near a forest or in the mountains, as my father and I love observing the wildlife around us. I fell in love with this activity at an early age. It came as no surprise to anybody, as I've always had loads of pets at home.
Speaker 5.
My best friend has recommended a lot of hobbies to me over the years, but none of them were really for me. I tried almost all of them, but every time it ended up in disaster. I remember one time I was trying out martial arts and I broke my wrist. I needed a lot of physiotherapy, and my physiotherapist suggested some classes in yoga after my treatment finished. Whilst it helped me to get my flexibility back, above all, what it really taught me was how to release tension and take things more slowly. Signing up for those sessions is something I'll never regret.
Speaker 6.
At first, I started jogging just as a hobby, but then I began to notice that it had a positive effect on my stamina. I didn't get so breathless while running to catch the bus in the morning. I just loved the way I felt so fit. I recommended this to my best friend, and he enjoyed it too. In the past, I thought my hobby would be something to make me more relaxed, as I tend to get quite tense at times. But no, the active way is the way for me.
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear a radio presenter talking to an astronaut called Pete Hardy about his career. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
In the studio today, I've got Pete Hardy with me, and I'll be asking him about being an astronaut. Pete, tell us how it all happened for you.
Well, as a boy, I watched a movie about an alien, and I dreamt about going into space. But then I grew up, and my dreams changed, and eventually I became a helicopter pilot. The deciding moment, though, came when I got more involved in space travel as a test pilot. Suddenly there were more opportunities, and that's when I learnt about a training program for new astronauts run by the European Space Agency.
Was it easy to get onto the program?
No. I was lucky enough to get through the selection process. You really need a lot of stamina to cope with the physical and psychological side of things. Nothing can prepare you for that. When I first applied, there were about 10,000 other applicants. Then only a quarter were invited for the first round of tests. It's well known that the tests are very comprehensive, and more than 50% of applicants fail their medical tests alone. But we all expected that.
Can you tell us about your experience of the training that followed?
After I was accepted, I had to move to the training centre on my own, and leaving my family behind was very tough for me. The lessons in spacecraft engineering were very demanding too, although my previous pilot training helped a bit. We also had to have a working knowledge of Russian to operate the spacecraft that took us to the space station. When it came to language learning, that was what I had most trouble dealing with.
When you were in space, were you ever afraid of anything?
We rehearsed everything on Earth before takeoff, even scary scenarios, such as putting out a fire inside a spacecraft. Personally, I found my first real walk in space terrifying. But that was nothing compared to the time when I was doing maintenance outside the craft and my helmet had a leak. But luckily, I managed to get back safely.
Incredible! When you're in space, do you ever have time to enjoy yourself?
Oh, yes, plenty. For me, the best thing was staying in contact with my loved ones. You can make a phone call every day from the space station. Once a month, there's also a delivery of real fruit and vegetables. And to be honest, I never saw my colleagues more delighted than when that happened. There was also new technology and equipment to be tested. For me, analysing the results was quite a thrill too, you know.
Do you ever get a strange sensation because of the speed the space station travels at?
Not inside the spacecraft. There are only a few windows, and you certainly can't open them to look out. Sometimes, when you wake up after sleeping upright, you can feel as if you're going to lose your balance. But when you're floating around in the cabin, you don't get this sensation at all.
This all reminds me of a film I saw a few years ago.
You mean the movie Gravity?
Mm.
Yes, I went to see it with a colleague who really loved it. I thought that it captured the aspects of life on board really well. My wife told me that if she'd seen it before I went to the space station, she wouldn't have let me go after seeing all the gripping scenes.
So, you've been into space now. What's next?
I've been approached by a TV channel to participate in a series of short films about life in space. We're starting next month, after I've taken some time off with my wife and sons. I'm also thinking about putting all my experiences down on paper. It's been such an adventure that I want to share it with others. Not right away, though.
Thank you, Pete, and we wish you all the best.
Now you will hear the interview again.
In the studio today, I've got Pete Hardy with me, and I'll be asking him about being an astronaut. Pete, tell us how it all happened for you.
Well, as a boy, I watched a movie about an alien, and I dreamt about going into space. But then I grew up, and my dreams changed, and eventually I became a helicopter pilot. The deciding moment, though, came when I got more involved in space travel as a test pilot. Suddenly, there were more opportunities, and that's when I learned about a training program for new astronauts run by the European Space Agency.
Was it easy to get onto the program?
No. I was lucky enough to get through the selection process. You really need a lot of stamina to cope with the physical and psychological side of things. Nothing can prepare you for that. When I first applied, there were about 10,000 other applicants. Then only a quarter were invited for the first round of tests. It's well known that the tests are very comprehensive, and more than 50% of applicants fail their medical tests alone. But we all expected that.
Can you tell us about your experience of the training that followed?
After I was accepted, I had to move to the training centre on my own, and leaving my family behind was very tough for me. The lessons in spacecraft engineering were very demanding too, although my previous pilot training helped a bit. We also had to have a working knowledge of Russian to operate the spacecraft that took us to the space station. When it came to language learning, that was what I had most trouble dealing with.
When you were in space, were you ever afraid of anything?
We rehearsed everything on Earth before takeoff, even scary scenarios, such as putting out a fire inside a spacecraft. Personally, I found my first real walk in space terrifying. But that was nothing compared to the time when I was doing maintenance outside the craft and my helmet had a leak. But luckily, I managed to get back safely.
Incredible! When you're in space, do you ever have time to enjoy yourself?
Oh, yes, plenty. For me, the best thing was staying in contact with my loved ones. You can make a phone call every day from the space station. Once a month, there's also a delivery of real fruit and vegetables. And to be honest, I never saw my colleagues more delighted than when that happened. There was also new technology and equipment to be tested. For me, analysing the results was quite a thrill too, you know.
Do you ever get a strange sensation because of the speed the space station travels at?
Not inside the spacecraft. There are only a few windows, and you certainly can't open them to look out. Sometimes, when you wake up after sleeping upright, you can feel as if you're going to lose your balance. But when you're floating around in the cabin, you don't get this sensation at all.
This all reminds me of a film I saw a few years ago.
You mean the movie Gravity?
Yes,
I went to see it with a colleague who really loved it. I thought that it captured the aspects of life on board really well. My wife told me that if she'd seen it before I went to the space station, she wouldn't have let me go after seeing all the gripping scenes.
So, you've been into space now. What's next?
I've been approached by a TV channel to participate in a series of short films about life in space. We're starting next month after I've taken some time off with my wife and sons. I'm also thinking about putting all my experiences down on paper. It's been such an adventure that I want to share it with others. Not right away, though.
Thank you, Pete, and we wish you all the best. That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Part A. You will hear a scientist giving a talk about the discovery of a rainforest. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Welcome to today's talk about the discovery of the forest of Mount Mabu in Mozambique. The great discovery was made by John Burns. As a child, he always dreamt of becoming a scientist. That is why it came as no surprise to his parents when he decided to study science at university and went on to become a biologist for the Kew Royal Botanic Gardens in London. 7 years ago, he was working on an isolated mountain in Malawi, researching its biodiversity. This was his first time working in such a remote location. At times, provisions were scarce, as they could only be delivered on foot. The location of his previous research was a small village with good links to the capital, which allowed for the transport of food, necessary equipment, and medicine by train. During his research in Malawi, he was hoping to find more similar biodiversity spots in the region. One day he noticed that there are similar mountains across the border on the Mozambique side. As soon as Dr. Burns returned to the UK, he immediately researched the specific area using Google Earth. After zooming in, he noticed a very dark green patch on Mount Mabu, which could only mean one thing, the rainforest he'd been looking for. Further research showed that Mount Mabu had never been mapped or explored and was therefore most definitely hiding great treasures. Dr. Burns went back to the region to examine and confirm his findings. He was planning to go in March, but since it tends to be the wettest month, the expedition was postponed until later in the year. His team finally set off at the beginning of October. The international team consisted of 18 scientists and 53 porters. They had to endure a demanding climb up the mountain first to reach the rainforest. The high temperatures also added to the challenge. When Dr. Burns and the expedition entered the rainforest, they were astonished by the size of the trees and the number of bustling life forms around them. Since the very first trip made by Dr. Burns, 12 new species of living creatures and plants have been discovered. Mount Mabu is home to a wide variety of birds, butterflies, reptiles, and tropical plants. Amongst those species, there are some that are extremely rare and can't be found anywhere else in the world. That is why the scientists were delighted when in 2009 The government announced that all logging in the Mabu forest would be prevented. This discovery is really exciting, and it shows that there are still places on Earth that we know nothing about. I hope you enjoyed the talk. Any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Welcome to today's talk about the discovery of the forest of Mount Mabu in Mozambique. The great discovery was made by John Burns. As a child, he always dreamt of becoming a scientist. That is why it came as no surprise to his parents when he decided to study science at university, and went on to become a biologist for the Kew Royal Botanic Gardens in London. 7 years ago, he was working on an isolated mountain in Malawi, researching its biodiversity. This was his first time working in such a remote location. At times, provisions were scarce, as they could only be delivered on foot. The location of his previous research was a small village with good links to the capital, which allowed for the transport of food, necessary equipment and medicine by train. During his research in Malawi, he was hoping to find more similar biodiversity spots in the region. One day he noticed that there are similar mountains across the border on the Mozambique side. As soon as Dr. Burns returned to the UK, he immediately researched the specific area using Google Earth. After zooming in, he noticed a very dark green patch on Mount Mabu, which could only mean one thing: the rainforest he'd been looking for. Further research showed that Mount Mabu had never been mapped or explored, and was therefore most definitely hiding great treasures. Dr. Burns went back to the region to examine and confirm his findings. He was planning to go in March, but since it tends to be the wettest month, the expedition was postponed until later in the year. His team finally set off at the beginning of October. The international team consisted of 18 scientists and 53 porters. They had to endure a demanding climb up the mountain first to reach the rainforest. The high temperatures also added to the challenge. When Dr. Burns and the expedition entered the rainforest, they were astonished by the size of the trees and the number of bustling life forms around them. Since the very first trip made by Dr. Burns, 12 new species of living creatures and plants have been discovered. Mount Mabu is home to a wide variety of birds, butterflies, reptiles, and tropical plants. Amongst those species, there are some that are extremely rare and can't be found anywhere else in the world. That is why the scientists were delighted when in 2009 the government announced that all logging in the Mabu forest would be prevented. This discovery is really exciting, and it shows that there are still places on Earth that we know nothing about. I hope you enjoyed the talk. Any questions?
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about new discoveries and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Pete. Did you go to the talk about the rainforest in Mozambique?
Yes, and I loved it. It got me thinking about all those species of plants and animals that haven't been found yet. Funnily enough, in the same week as the talk, I read an article about a new insect species found in a rainforest in South America.
Wow. What does it look like? Do you know?
Yes. I saw a picture of it in the newspaper. It looks very strange, actually, like something from outer space. It's kind of yellowish-brown, and it has long orange lines down its back and orange dots on the rest of its body. But the most amazing feature is its tail. It reminded me of something my mum uses to do the dusting. How could I describe it to you? Well, it's like loads of fine white fibres stuck together.
Don't worry, I can check it online. What's it called?
It doesn't have a name yet, but the author of the article jokingly called it Fuzzy-Headed Troll Doll because of its looks.
Rainforests are amazing, and not just because of the animals. Just think about all the healing properties of the tropical plants that could be used in medicine. Just the other day, I read that tropical plants in your house are believed to reduce tiredness, headaches, or stress. One company noticed that their staff were more efficient and less likely to become sick after the company placed a lot of tropical plants in their offices.
Speaking of plants, this may interest you too. Scientists from Canada have discovered that if they analyse the layers of pink algae found on the Arctic seafloor, they can get some interesting information.
What sort of information?
The changes in the plant show a direct link to a decrease in the amount of ice in the Arctic Sea. From this, they can tell what climate changes have been happening over the centuries. It's like a detailed history lesson in climate change.
Well, I have one interesting discovery for you as well. There is a new island close to Japan.
How come?
The island just emerged from the sea as a result of a volcanic eruption. It's 220 metres long and it was spotted by Japan's coast guards. The local authorities aren't letting any tourists see it, though, because they think it might be too dangerous.
A new island? I haven't heard something like this before.
Apparently it's happened before, but some of these islands disappear just as fast as they appear.
I'd better look into that. It sounds really fascinating.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hi, Pete. Did you go to the talk about the rainforest in Mozambique?
Yes, and I loved it. It got me thinking about all those species of plants and animals that haven't been found yet. Funnily enough, in the same week as the talk, I read an article about a new insect species found in a rainforest in South America.
Wow. What does it look like? Do you know?
Yes, I saw a picture of it in the newspaper. It looks very strange, actually, like something from outer space. It's kind of yellowish-brown, and it has long orange lines down its back and orange dots on the rest of its body. But the most amazing feature is its tail. It reminded me of something my mum uses to do the dusting. How could I describe it to you? Well, it's like loads of fine white fibres stuck together.
Don't worry, I can check it online. What's it called?
It doesn't have a name yet, but the author of the article jokingly called it Fuzzy-Headed Troll Doll because of its looks.
Rainforests are amazing, and not just because of the animals. Just think about all the healing properties of the tropical plants that could be used in medicine. Just the other day, I read that tropical plants in your house are believed to reduce tiredness, headaches, or stress. One company noticed that their staff were more efficient and less likely to become sick after the company placed a lot of tropical plants in their offices.
Speaking of plants, this may interest you too. Scientists from Canada have discovered that if they analyse the layers of pink algae found on the Arctic seafloor, they can get some interesting information.
What sort of information?
The changes in the plant show a direct link to a decrease in the amount of ice in the Arctic Sea. From this, they can tell what climate changes have been happening over the centuries. It's like a detailed history lesson in climate change.
Well, I have one interesting discovery for you as well. There is a new island close to Japan.
How come?
The island just emerged from the sea as a result of a volcanic eruption. It's 220 metres long and it was spotted by Japan's coast guards. The local authorities aren't letting any tourists see it, though, because they think it might be too dangerous.
A new island? I haven't heard something like this before.
Apparently it's happened before, but some of these islands disappear just as fast as they appear.
I'd better look into that. It sounds really fascinating.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.